The Belgian Grand Prix got off to a frantic opening lap as both Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso were left wondering what could have been. Max Verstappen left us asking ourselves, is this man even human? I don't know at this point. And how long will it be until we get bored of Ferrari's strategic blunders? All this and more on Unlapped. Anytime he's involved in an incident or a collision, I'm always like, oh my, of course it was. Oh, let me see the replay. It wasn't his fault.
I'm not sure if you put Leclerc in the same car as Russell, he'd beat Russell.
He's just found this setup that makes it work, and it is just a joy to watch.
Wie heißt der Mutter von Niki Lauda? Mama Lauda, Mama Lauda.
Welcome to Unlapped, an ESPN F1 show. I'm Katie George. He's Nate Saunders, and he's Lawrence Edmondson. And we're here to break down the race weekend at Spa and what was a brilliant performance by Max Verstappen. It's great to see you both, as promised. I have your all's picks and predictions prior to Spa, and I'd like to go over them. Lawrence projected that Lewis Hamilton was going to finish first. Charles Leclerc second in P2, and George Russell in P3. Do you want to jump in here, Lawrence, before we get to Nate's selections?
Well, I can't really defend that other than to say that it would have been very exciting if it happened, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would have
been a brilliant race. And I think I said I didn't underplay how good Max would be. I just thought that he would have some sort of problem, and they did have to change his engine. But really, I have no excuse. I should know better. Max Verstappen at Spa. The Red Bull as dominant as it is in a straight line, I really probably should have called that.
I agree. It would have made for a very entertaining race had your predictions actually come to fruition. Nate, on the other hand, stuck with Max. He had Max winning.
I did.
He had Lewis coming in P2, so a little off Whoops. There. And Charles also on the podium, which certainly did not happen as we know.
Yeah. No, I'm glad. I think I said when I made it that I was going to do the boring pick and pick Max, and it does seem like the easy pick now. So maybe going forward, we have to pick, like, obviously Max is going to win. However, who might win if Max doesn't win? Like, maybe that's going to be the easiest thing going forward, because, as we'll get onto, that was just ominous, wasn't it? And I didn't know when I made that prediction who's going to start 14th. But, you know, that was with a regular weekend, I predicted that. So, yeah, the fact he still did was pretty nuts.
So when you found out that obviously the power unit penalty was going to put him at P14, what was your thought process? Was there any question that he wouldn't be able to hunt his way down all the way up to the starting point of the grid?
Well, when we first heard it, it was during practice. And we thought, this could make for a really exciting race, because not only was it Max, there were seven drivers in total with some kind of penalty. And we thought, oh, this is going to be great. Mixed up grid, away we go. But then we got to qualifying, and Max, with one attempt in Q3, not even the usual two, just one attempt, went out there 0.7 seconds faster than Carlos Sainz, who was doing everything he could with a car set up to be on pole position. Meanwhile, Max obviously had his car set up for the race, because when he got to the race, he demolished the field. So, yeah, we were hopeful that we would get a thriller of a race, you know, with Max potentially winning it from 14th on the grid. But when we saw the qualifying pace, the penny kind of dropped, you know, this was going to be a one-man show, and that's what it turned out to be.
Yeah, it truly did. Gosh, it was unbelievable watching that from start to finish. Just a masterclass. It was brilliant. Think of all of the buzzwords that you want. It was a brilliant performance by him and Red Bull overall. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment on what you want to see more of, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts so more people can find us. Okay, before we just jump into all the details of the Belgian Grand Prix, let's hit some news first. As both of you confessed your love for Spa, I don't know if we should strap in and foresee a long-term future with Spa, but we at least know that we'll be back next season racing at Spa. So what did you guys make of the one-year contract news, Nate?
Yeah, it was, I mean, encouraging. Like, we weren't sure what to make of it, were we, when we spoke last week? It did seem like it might be the last race. It's good news, but I think there's still a massive question mark. It's great that Spa's going to be on next year, but you're right, that one-year deal, if you look at everything else Formula One's doing around every other race, you know, Bahrain's getting a 15-year deal. I think Qatar and Saudi both have 10 years. So this is very much a one-year deal, we believe, because the South Africa race at Kyalami is not ready yet. So as good as it is for fans of Spa for next year, long term, it's really difficult to see where it goes. So hopefully they can find some space on it. But I think we touched on it last week, didn't we, that F1's basically running out of 3 weeks to put these some of these races. So good news, but I'm still very skeptical long term. But it's a good thing because we'll get to go back there one time next year. And hopefully by then, you know, some common sense has prevailed and, you know, they can talk about saving Spa. Because I think that in the lead up to a lot of these races, there's a lot of, you know, people say, oh, this race isn't going to be here. And then you get to it or you get to the week of it. And it seems like that's when F1 takes action on trying to keep it or not. So it's good that it's still around because it means it's still in the conversation. It doesn't just drop off the calendar and kind of out of sight, out of mind. I think that's going to be a very good thing long term. So, yeah, hopefully I'd love it to stay on for as long as it can. But we'll see. 1 year is good enough for now. And then we'll go from there.
Lawrence, what do you think would need to happen for them to enter into a long-term agreement after this one-year deal?
I think there'd have to be fewer options elsewhere. So South Africa, I think there's still some optimism that even though it's not going to happen next year, it could happen in future years. And really, as we talked about before, F1 is up against the limit, this 24 race limit, which is part of the regulations, essentially. It's what they've agreed with the teams. They can't go beyond that. So something would have to change. And I don't know, I feel like if there's enough pressure from everyone that, you know, these tracks should remain there, then that might just do it. Certainly if it comes from the fans, because ultimately these decisions, you know, the fans are the future of the sport. They need to be watching it to be able to get money out of the back of it. But of course, these circuits are offering huge amounts of money as well. So it's a tightrope everyone's walking, but they've got Spa for another year. That's a start. I feel kind of bad because we really hyped up Spa. And if anybody watching it for the first time, they're like, why are they talking about how good this race is? Because Max went and dominated. But obviously, if the cars are a little bit more evenly matched and, you know, we don't have a driver on the exceptional form that Max is on, you can get great racing there. And above all else, you can get overtaken. We saw that. So hopefully it'll stay. But yeah, really, it needs there to be space on the calendar. And ideally, it needs Spa to be able to come up with a financial package that is enough for F1 to want it to be on.
And anyone who watched F1, started watching F1 last year, hasn't just had this race. They've had three laps last year in the rain. So trust us, Spa is better than the last 2 years have made out. It's much, much better than that.
You've heard it here first. There's also some drama off grid, per usual, with the sport. There was a lot of excitement last week when Porsche finally made its announcement with its trademark that it was entering Formula One. And now, Lawrence, it kind of looks like Red Bull has gotten cold feet and might be pulling out of the deal. Is that a fair assessment at this point?
Yeah, there's certainly some discussion within Red Bull over which way to go in the future. The plan, as we know, because it was filed in the Moroccan antitrust legislation kind of area where we managed to get hold of what they were planning, was that Porsche would come in, buy 50% of Red Bull Technologies, which owns the Red Bull F1 team, and then they would come in and they would partner with Red Bull. So you'd have a Red Bull Porsche F1 team. You'd have these engines, which are going to be built at Milton Keynes at the Red Bull factory. They would be branded Porsche. And then you would have this kind of combination, these two great brands working together. I think there's still, within certain parts of Red Bull, a lot of enthusiasm for that. But there's another side to it as well, is that this Red Bull race team, one of the reasons it's so good, one of the reasons that it's so competitive, is because they have real kind of strength in decision making right at the top. And if you bring in Porsche, you're going to dilute that. And this is the concern, is that if they can't quite get the voting mechanisms working, you know, of who gets the final say, how much say does Porsche get, how much say does Red Bull get, can someone like Christian Horner, who's the team principal, and Helmut Marko, who's been a long-term Red Bull advisor to Dietrich Mateschitz, the owner of Red Bull, if those people can't make the decisions they need to make to turn this into a team that continues to compete at the front, then, you know, maybe that's not what the team needs. So there's definitely some discussion within, and then there's talk of maybe Honda wants to stay on. Of course, we were expecting, well, we saw Honda pull out of Formula One. They're still building the engines for Red Bull until 2025. But now, you know, there's some talk in Japan again because of the success they've seen with Red Bull, of course, winning a championship last year, well on their way to winning a championship this year. Maybe Honda want to actually take a bit of that back and use it. So it's really teetering on an edge. And it seems like some people in Red Bull want one thing, some people want another. Of course, this question was asked to Christian Horner, and he said that from 2026, they will use Red Bull powertrain engines. So he confirmed that they will be built in that plant that is currently being kind of developed at Red Bull's Milton Keynes factory. But he couldn't say at this point what brand would be on them. Will it be a Porsche brand? Will it be a Honda brand? And he really kind of took a step back from that. And so at no point have Red Bull or Porsche really confirmed this, but we've had enough little hints, like you said, with that finally trademark, you know, going there. So there's been little bits here and there. And of course, news this weekend just gone, that Audi is coming in. Another open secret, if you like, in Formula One. We knew Audi were going to come in at some point as a power unit manufacturer, but they're doing it very differently. They're setting up their own power unit factory in Germany. And of course, to do that and to get enough time to put everything in place, they needed to get that rolling now. So they've done that. Whereas the Red Bull situation is slightly different, because Porsche could still come in at a later date, put their name on the Red Bull car, on the Red Bull engines, and participate that way. But it's a really interesting moment, because Porsche, you know, their brand really does fit with F1 in many ways. Of course, we think of them as sports cars, we think about performance, but also they're really going for sustainable fuel. They've just built a sustainable fuel factory in Chile. You know, they're really going down this road, which F1 is also keen to go down from 2026 onwards. So there's some synergies there. It all seems to make sense, but something at the very last minute has stopped it being announced. And so no doubt we'll find out in the coming months exactly what that is, but there is a few signs that there's a few cold feet from either side, and they just can't quite get this deal finalized and over the line.
And so what exactly does Audi's deal actually entail when they're going to enter in 2026, Nate?
So yeah, that's one thing that we're not 100% sure of. We expected, so when Lawrence and I heard about this deal, we said, oh, okay, well, it's going to be announced with a tie-up to a team. We thought it was going to be Alfa Romeo. We didn't get that. We just basically had Audi is going to enter, and they're still working on that, you know, that team tie-up on the side. So it seems like they're going to buy... So Alfa Romeo, obviously, the team itself is called Sauber. That's what it raced as for many years. So as far as we know, that's the plan, and that's where they're going to come in. But it was interesting that Audi announced without that part of the deal there. I think F1 was keen to get Audi's commitment on board and say, look, we've got Audi coming in. So it's a huge news story for F1. It's a really, really positive story. So the longer they waited, the longer and longer they waited, you know, it just creates more doubt. So we're not too sure, but everything I've heard, and I think everything that Lawrence has heard as well, is that Alfa Romeo / Sauber is going to be where they go in. And it makes sense. It makes sense to go in there as well. You know, obviously, up until now, it looked like Porsche were going in on the Red Bull side. So that's always been an easy way in. Michael Andretti, American team owner, tried to buy Sauber last year, was unsuccessful. I think, you know, maybe Sauber knew that, you know, there was the Audi interest there. I'm not sure, but that's been a team or an entity that has been looking, maybe not actively looking to sell, but has been the subject of quite a lot of takeover rumors over the past few years. So it definitely is it's kind of the most sensible place to look for them.
Is Honda just fickle? I feel like if you entered into F1 fandom and you watched Drive to Survive, it's very apparent. You're like, can you just make up are you in this or are you not? Because I feel like they're invested. And then sometimes they're like, no, actually we want out. And then, oh no, but we want to be associated so you can continue to use our powertrain. Like, what is the deal with Honda at this point?
This is the story of Honda in Formula One for a very long time. You know, going back to the 80s, of course, they powered Ayrton Senna and Alan Prost to world championships with McLaren. Then they pulled out, and then they came back and they had their own team through the late 2000s. Then there was a financial crash and they pulled out, and then they came back with McLaren. It was all a bit embarrassing because they came into a very hard set of regulations to try and crack, and they didn't manage it for several years. And then eventually they got there and with Red Bull. And of course, now they've pulled out this year officially, but they're kind of still in. And it's really interesting, because the way Honda perceive F1 is, it's always an R&D exercise. So it's not just about winning. It's also about what can we learn from developing an engine to Formula One's set of regulations and put that into our road cars. Now, at the very top of Honda, they've decided that actually their road cars going forward are not really going to be petrol driven cars. And of course, we know Formula One cars, whether it's sustainable fuel or not, will be petrol driven for the foreseeable future. So Honda said, no, look, we're going to put everything into electric, maybe a bit of hydrogen. Okay. And so that's where they wanted all of their R&D to go. So to have this F1 R&D project on the side just wouldn't have fitted in the whole, you know, the whole plan, the wider plan from the top of Honda. So that's why they pulled out. But now, you know, maybe it would work. And of course, Audi are also a company that wants to go electric in the future, and, you know, really pushing into electric technology. But they're saying, look, there's this hybrid element of the F1 engines from 2026 that's going to create 50% of the power to the rear wheels. So 500 brake horsepower. You know, if you can create a hybrid system that does 500 brake horsepower, you can also create electric cars with that kind of power. So there is an argument there. And I think Honda's just weighing it up and will get a decision at some point, and it would be great to keep them, because the more of those manufacturers you have in F1, the better it tends to be.
I think the key to success in Formula One, it seems to be, is to see where Honda are and make sure you're aligned with that team when they pull out. Because twice now, in the 2000s, we had Braun. Lawrence mentioned the Honda team. They pulled out at the end of 2008. That team became the Braun GP team, which is now the Mercedes team. They won the championship in 2009. Now, they did do it with a Mercedes engine, so it wasn't a fully Honda operation, but it was a car built by Honda, and it was an unbelievable car that year. And Ross Braun kind of knew the potential of that car. And I've always found it fascinating that happened. And then when they announced we're pulling out with Red Bull obviously win the Drivers' Championship this year. You know, they're on the verge of winning both. So it has been, they've both pulled out both times. They've pulled the rug out from their F1 operation just when it's been there. Just when you're like, you guys could dominate Formula One for a while now if you stayed in. And Mercedes arguably came in, you know, thanks to Honda pulling out. There was that great opportunity for them to buy the Braun team. So it's really funny how it's worked out. And I love the Honda brand, but they just seem to be like wrong place, right time, or right place, wrong time, just depending on which one you want to look at it. But yeah, either unlucky or poorly managed. I don't know what it is, but just something just doesn't always add up for them. It's crazy.
And I'd also like to know, have Americans been mispronouncing Porsche for an entirety?
I've never been sure, honestly. I never knew. So growing up, I thought, is it Porsche? Is it Porsche? So obviously, like growing up, I watched the Friends episode where Jerry has the Porsche and he's calling it Porsche. But I always was like, I'm not quite sure if I'm in on the joke here, if it's the right one. So I've always said Porsche. But
definitely Porsche. Definitely, yeah, Porsche.
I've always said Porsche.
And you're English.
Exactly. That's the voice of God. So, well, you know, that is
my time around F1, which has been brief, I've only heard it pronounced Porsche. And so I'm like, I've been, you know, in the corner, like calculating everything, like going back to every conversation that I've ever had about a Porsche, which is not frequent, by the way. And I'm like, have I mispronounced this always? Okay. Good to know.
I think that's a sign that F1's embracing America, I guess. It's like, is it Porsche? Is it Porsche? We don't know.
It's so adaptable.
Yeah, it's a bit like when Alpine joined and everyone's like, how do you actually say this?
Yeah,
you know, for the first year or two.
Speaking of Alpine, great segue there, Nate.
Completely intentional.
Intentional,
maybe.
Yes. Okay, so we've got the FIA hearing between Alpine McLaren over the contract dispute of Oscar Piastri started Monday. Okay, so it could be several days till we hear any news. Full disclosure, this is a Monday afternoon in the States right now, a Monday evening over in Europe for you guys as we're recording this. So where do we stand? And is Alpine rightful in the fact that they had a contract with Piastri?
I'd love to be a fly on the wall in this. It was funny. I tweeted out a story on this earlier, and about 50% of the comments were like, why aren't the FIA streaming this? Why aren't they, you know? And I was like, do you realize this would be a really boring thing to watch, I think, because they're going over the minutiae of a contract. But it shows you how big the interest is in it. So at the time of recording, we don't know. Of course, when people are listening to this, they might know more than we do. But the fascinating thing is, talking to people in Formula One for about 2 weeks over the summer break, everybody said, I'm convinced McLaren has the deal is ironclad here. But since the Belgian Grand Prix week has happened, I think Alpine has been able to talk to a few more people, and there's some real doubt now. You know, I think I would still say I would bet on McLaren over Alpine getting the deal based on, you know, what people are saying and what people who kind of have knowledge of what's been signed are saying. But you never know. You know, a lot of people, there's obviously a lot of onus on McLaren to talk up their chances, a lot of onus on Alpine to talk up their chances as well. What's really fascinating for me, I think the easily the most fascinating storyline from this would be if Alpine's contract is upheld, because
then what happens?
I'm not
sure relationship looks damaged.
Yeah, I mean, you had Otmar Szafnauer said, they said, you know, what do you wish had happened here? And he said, I wish Oscar Piastri just had a bit more integrity. You know, he said he told Oscar when Oscar was sat in the simulator of their Alpine F1 car, you know, obviously, you know, part of the program that they've laid on for him to get him ready for Formula One. And apparently Oscar said, oh, thanks very much. I would have been suspicious if a guy had just said thanks very much, if I just told him we're going to give you your F1 debut, but that's me. You know, Otmar obviously was very trusting, and, you know, Piastri left, and obviously in the corridor was probably then, you know, either constructing that great tweet he sent out or he had it sent to him. But, you know, clearly there, I think this is where potential versus character is now going to be key. If Alpine's is held up, do they want Piastri because of how good he is? or can they not look past the fact that he's, you know, really humiliated them? I think it's really made Alpine look really bad. And if they don't want him, what happens then? They're in a great position, I think, then. They can actually then turn to McLaren and say, well, we'll still give you Piastri. You've got to pay us for him. There's been a theory this week about them maybe going to AlphaTauri and saying, well, how about we trade Piastri with Pierre Gasly? Now, I think Pierre Gasly, deep down, probably wants to get out of the Red Bull program. From I've spoken to one person pretty high up at Red Bull who was basically like, if we get an offer for Gasly, we're going to sell him, because they just don't. They just don't see him going back to the main team. So it would put Alpine in a really strong position. I think they'll still be in that strong position if Piastri goes to McLaren, but it won't be quite as strong because they won't be able to use Piastri as a pawn. But I think they'll still be in the running for kind of Ricciardo or for Gasly, by the sounds of it. So really fascinating. And I think that there should be one contract dispute every year in Formula One, because I think it's great. It's just fantastic to not know who's going where. And the fact that, you know, they then have to turn up at the team that they've just spurned, I think it's great. The last few weeks have been awesome. So that's where we stand at the moment. Of course, this is likely to be settled by the time of the Zandvoort race, but it could take a while. I was told it could take 48 hours, could take 72 hours, and that was kind of Monday midday Europe time. So we're talking into Wednesday, maybe into Thursday. The teams will want it sorted. You know, they don't want that dragging on, because also they have drivers ringing them up saying, you know, do you have a seat for us next year or not? So I think all parties want to get it sorted as quickly as possible, but it's not quite as simple as that.
If anything, it means the two of you are going to get glorious quotes again at Zandvoort as you get there, because we should hopefully have a decision as to where Oscar Piastri will likely drive next season. Okay, let's take a look at how things played out in Spa this past weekend. Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Just in case you missed it, the race finished as follows. Max Verstappen took the checkered flag. Teammate Checo Perez finished P2. Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari rounded out the top three. George Russell and Fernando Alonso were fourth and fifth. Charles Leclerc finished P6 after a five-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane, which was added to his final time, so he dropped P6. Esteban Ocon, Sebastian Vettel, Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon round out the top 10. What a weekend, guys, it was for Max Verstappen. Plenty to talk about throughout the race. Obviously, we'll get to Ferrari, as we always do. But Lawrence, you were on the ground. Just what impressed you most about Max's drives over the weekend?
I think how effortless it looked. It was just one of those days where you just couldn't see anyone else winning. And we do get that in Formula One. We've had periods of domination. But to win from 14th on the grid and be up in first place, like actual net first place, you know, without the pit stops, by the 18th lap, and to not really face any challenges along the way, including from his teammate Sergio Perez in exactly the same car, who just looked nowhere relative to Max. That was something very, very special. And I think it was a combination of a number of things. Clearly, the car suited the track very much so. And clearly, they had the setup absolutely nailed. It seems like Max, at the start of the year, wasn't 100% happy with the Red Bull and the way it was handling, and actually it seemed to suit Checo a little bit more. But in recent races, he's just found this setup that makes it work, and it is just a joy to watch, you know, in terms of him at the wheel. But in terms of the races, you know, it's a danger. It can make it pretty dull because it's really hard to know how anyone's going to stop Max on that form.
It's important to mention, and we talked about it briefly at the start, that obviously he started at the back of the grid at P14. At what point of the race, what move, what overtake, Lawrence, were you like, here we go, here we go again?
I think it was pretty much lap one. I think I looked down at the standings. I mean, Hansen, exactly what he was doing, but he was up to eighth. And you're like, wow, you know. And also, he knew he had so much pace. He didn't have to take risks. So at no point did you see him really put it on the line because he just didn't need to. And then a series of overtakes where he just breezed past people on the Kemmel straight with the use of DRS. And when you see that at Spa, because it's a track where you really can overtake and where if you get the advantage through Eau Rouge and you slipstream someone onto that straight, you can just breeze past them. And you saw that happen a number of times. And, you know, when we looked at the grid, we were like, well, who's he going to struggle against? Well, Checo, if he gets in the way, eventually Red Bull will probably engineer a way for him to get past. So probably not Checo so much, but Carlos Sainz was the one we felt that maybe he'd struggle against. But Sainz's tire degradation was off the scale compared to Max, which meant that, you know, he just wasn't able to fight properly. Max had tires about three or four laps younger, but just breezed past him. And so it was a remarkable performance. And this is the thing, like, we should stress how brilliant that performance was and how great Max was, because, you know, you don't see drivers do that all the time. Even drivers as good as Max, you know, it's not always made to look that effortless. So that was very special what we witnessed.
It couldn't have gone better, I don't think, for Red Bull, obviously, with Checo finishing in second right behind Max, not right behind Max, like 17.8 seconds behind Max, I think, to be exact. But still a great day for Red Bull. They're now 118 points clear in the Constructors' Championship. Was it too easy for Red Bull, Nate, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and again, not to take anything away from them, because I think Lawrence has absolutely nailed it. You know, that was special from what we saw from Max. And I think it's crazy to look at that race. If you looked at that race in isolation and you told someone that it was in a season where we came into it thinking this is going to be a really close two-horse race and Mercedes are right there. You know, all year we've been like, Mercedes are right there. They're going to be in that fight soon. It's seeming less and less like that. I mean, that race, as great as it was to watch Max doing that, it did feel like a bit of a punch in the gut for anybody who wants that to be the case. Even if we're seeing just Mercedes fight for the odd win at the end of the year or Ferrari really taking the fight back to Red Bull, it really just doesn't feel like that's going to be the case in these last eight races. So it was too easy. It really was. And it's worrying as well, because you sometimes see this in Formula One at the start of a new rule cycle, you'll get one team that is clearly ahead of the rest. And I think Red Bull, the way they're doing things right now, and as Lawrence alluded to earlier, that great synergy they have in their decision-making at the moment, I really think they're going to be really difficult to knock off that kind of pedestal at the moment that they're on, you know, that height that they're on. Hopefully Ferrari and Mercedes can do that. But yeah, it's ominous, not just for this season, but going into next year as well, because yeah, I think that was probably as easy a race win as I've seen. Even if you think about Mercedes has some pretty comfortable wins. But they would always have, you know, the fight for second. It was like, all right, we've got to protect second now. There wasn't even any of that. They were just it's 1-2. From about lap eight, you were like, okay, this is a Red Bull 1-2. As soon as the safety car came out, it was like, okay, it's probably going to be Max win or Sergio win. And I've not seen an F1 race like that for a long time. Really strange. But full credit to everyone involved from Red Bull, because I think they were just playing a different game. Everyone said Max is on a different planet, but He's driving unbelievably, but I think Red Bull as well all year have kind of been, since they had those reliability issues, have been kind of flawless for a long time. So, yeah, really great package all around.
You mentioned synergy and decision-making, which means we are now going to transition to discuss Ferrari at this point. They celebrated Carlos Sainz on the podium. Should we feel good? Should Ferrari feel good, Lawrence, about Carlos's podium? Or was it a victory for Leclerc? And that was all that they were focused on, and they're disappointed with the results walking away from Spa.
Well, Carlos's podium was the best they could have done, given how quick the Red Bull was. So they maximised performance on that car. Of course, on Charles, not so much, because it never really clicked for him. And I know we had this problem at the end with the pit stop or anything, but even before that, it never really clicked in the way you thought it would. And a tear off, I mean, this just kind of sums up the day, doesn't it? A tear off from Max's visor. So if anyone is not aware, in order to keep their visor clean so the drivers can still see, they have these tear-offs across the visor, bit of thin plastic film that they can rip off, and they just throw it out of the cockpit because, you know, there's nowhere for them to put it. They just throw it out. Now, usually they just flutter off and into the, you know, gravel or whatever, or to the side of the track. This one went into Charles Leclerc's front brake duct following.
Like the most Ferrari thing ever, by the way.
You couldn't sum up a season more perfectly than that moment, could you?
Yeah, and overheated the brake to the point that Ferrari had to pit so they could get it out of there. They could see the temperatures rising. They could see a bit of smoke from it, so they had to pit. That was an unscheduled pit stop, kind of messed up any plans they had with the strategy from the very start, and certainly kind of put them on the back foot, put them further back down the field. So it just never really clicked. And then we got to the final couple of laps and they pitted in to get the fastest lap. And of course, I mean, this is again like how these things just seem to snowball for Ferrari at the moment, because the brake had overheated, it had damaged one of the sensors, which they use to monitor the speed in the pit lane. And therefore he was caught speeding in the pit lane, which led to a 5-second penalty, which dropped him back behind Fernando Alonso at the end of the race. So he lost a position because of the pit stop, and he didn't even get the fastest lap. In fact, it's not that he didn't get the fastest lap. He was 0.6 seconds off Max Verstappen for that fastest lap. And Max had done it 12 laps early in the race, which at Spa, when there's only 44 laps, is about a quarter of a race earlier, which means he had about 30 kilos more fuel in the car as well, which is a big, big amount of extra weight to be carrying around in a Formula One car. So all of these things, it just makes you realize, wow, you know, that is how far off Ferrari were at this track. And, you know, at the end of the day, Mattia Binotto, who I think a number of times we've criticized on this, he said, well, look, we had to take some risks, you know, it was going badly enough anyway, you know, we had to be brave, we had to do something, so we went for that extra point. And I don't really hold that against them, considering the position they were in, because the problem wasn't that pit stop, the problem was the complete lack of performance prior to that. So of course you have to blame Ferrari for that as well, but you know, I think this is a point they're at now where really they've just got to kind of try and get the odd win here, try and get the odd bonus point there, just to try and build up, you know, a bit of momentum going into next year, because this year, you know, forget about it.
I think there was one kind of glimmer of hope for Ferrari fans, is that I think Mattia Binotto afterwards, like Lawrence said, we have to be brave about things. I think it shows that Ferrari is still willing. They haven't been completely shut down by all this criticism, by all of this kind of negativity. They're still actually happy to go for things. I know it worked out in a completely Ferrari 2022 kind of way. It just, everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. But I was thinking, and I was pretty critical at the time, but I was actually thinking about it today, and I thought, well, that's better them trying, especially in that situation where they knew they weren't going to win the race. That was better than them trying and being like, let's not even go for fastest lap. Let's just finish the race. I think it showed there's still something there, and they're still thinking outside the box. Clearly, a lot of issues in terms of how they come to those decisions. Like the way they talked to Leclerc, and they were like, they kept saying question at the end. It sounded like a Destiny's Child song. they just kept saying question at the end. I was like, what are you doing? Like, so I don't know what's going on there, but I think if we can finally put a positive spin on Ferrari, I would say that at least they're still trying these things, because they could have got to a position where they're just like, let's just finish this race and go home. Maybe I'm really clutching at straws, but you know, I'm trying to get some positivity to.
I appreciate
see
the positivity.
Yeah,
I appreciate the positivity. It's been a while since we've been positive about this team on this pod. So I'm going to step outside of the box. So please follow me just for a moment. Could we see Charles Leclerc leave Ferrari and head to Mercedes if and when, and I don't want to see this happen anytime soon, but if and when Lewis Hamilton retires?
Love the idea.
Do you?
I do. I mean, Leclerc and Russell would be great. And I mean, I'm going to be controversial, and people listening might hate this, but I'm not sure if you put Leclerc in the same car as Russell, he'd beat Russell over the course of a season. I'm not sure. There's so many little things that happen. I'm not quite sure if Leclerc is as good as we all want him to be. I think he's great, but is he at that level? But in terms of Mercedes, we wondered this a few years ago when he signed first to 2024, then to 26, like tied down for a long, long time to Ferrari, and getting out of those deals in Formula One is difficult. I thought the same when Lando committed to such a long time with McLaren. You're putting so much faith in a team that at the moment isn't in the right place. So I don't know. I'd love to think Leclerc has the ability to get out of a deal like that, but I'm not sure. You know, with every year that's in a deal, I always think it kind of, you add 25% chance of them not being able to get out of it. That's just way, because of how many clauses are inside and how much money it would take to get them out of it. So maybe Lawrence is more optimistic for me, but I feel like he's committed to being Ferrari's guy for at least the foreseeable future. And I can't really see him. He doesn't seem to, at the moment, have that appetite. Maybe he will by next year or the year after. But yeah, I can't see it. I'd love to think he could do it, but I just don't know.
Well, it depends how long Lewis stays, doesn't it? Because if Lewis stays until around 26, then potentially, yeah, Leclerc can make that swap. And look, if he's a free agent, he's a free agent. You know, he will look at his options. And by then, we might have a situation where Mercedes are more competitive. I think right now, he's actually at the right place, you know, despite all the problems Ferrari's had. Of course, maybe Red Bull would be a slightly better place. But outside of Red Bull, he's at the right place because Ferrari have the next most competitive car. And, you know, they're in a position where they should be able to build on that in the future years. And some of the issues, the reliability to some extent, but also the strategy issues, those are stuff you can solve, you can learn, you can progress with a lot easier than just making the car faster. So he's not in a bad place. I think the other thing with Charles is that we think of him as a Ferrari driver because he went through that Ferrari Junior Academy, but you have to be careful with that because remember Lewis Hamilton, once upon a time, was a McLaren driver. No one could ever see him leaving McLaren. Mm. And then when he decided to do that, and this was before Mercedes had had the recent success that they had, everyone thought he was mad. They thought, you know, going from McLaren in 2012, where the team had won races to Mercedes, the team that had won one, I think, that year, you know, was just bonkers, but it built something. So I think if Charles can look at the horizon when his contract is coming towards the end and pick a team that has all the ingredients for success going forward, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't leave because all these drivers are there to win world championships. And if he's been there that long and he hasn't done it with Ferrari, then he'll be looking elsewhere, I think.
Well, let's stay here and continue to discuss Lewis Hamilton and the weekend that was incredibly frustrating, I think, for him at Mercedes. They looked way off the pace in practice and qualifying. It was reported that Lewis had stayed until midnight, I think the night before the race, working with the team, trying to figure out how they could win. And, you know, in a matter of seconds, it was all over within a few corners when he had his collision with Alonso that put the Mercedes out of the race. You know, what did you guys make of not only the decision to kind of turn in, he said he was in his blind spot, but also his reaction post-race as well.
Yeah, it's rare to see Hamilton make those kind of mistakes. I think I was surprised they didn't, you know, investigate it further. I like the reasoning. We saw the stewards go a bit too far into the weeds of investigating things like that, especially on the first lap. But yeah, you know, it really was him just kind of turning in. Alonso had no space. We can get onto the kind of Hamilton Alonso 2 or 3 or 4, whichever chapter their rivalry this is now. But I don't know really where that comes from with Lewis, because this year, you know, he's kind of been, you know, Russell's been so consistent, so solid, and we know how good Lewis is. You know, a few years ago, the superlatives that we were using to describe Max a minute ago, we were using them to describe Lewis. So I don't know whether that just is just a small mistake, whether it comes out of, you know, this eagerness that I think he probably could have, you know, he may have challenged Sainz for third place instead of Russell. I don't know, but yeah, it was weird. It was odd. And yeah, I just think very uncharacteristic of him to make that kind of mistake. And yeah, that really like Hollywood style shot of him walking slowly down that path, again, kind of sums his year up. I saw loads of memes about that and, you know, album covers and all sorts of things. But I think that was really quite a good snapshot. If you think, it shows you how far he's kind of come since Abu Dhabi last year. You know, this was a guy who was 8 or 9 corners away from winning an 8th world championship, had it taken away from him in those circumstances. And now is kind of hasn't won a race this year. He said on the Friday, I think he said, I'm not going to be sad to see the back of this car at all, which you can totally understand. So yeah, it's interesting to see where his head's at right now. I don't think his motivation to continue is gone, but we've not seen Lewis in this kind of position for a long, long time. So it's pretty fascinating to see how he, you know, he has Still I Rise on his helmet is kind of his motto. So it'll be interesting to see in Zandvoort, you know, Max Verstappen's home race as well, kind of how he rises to that occasion. I think, you know, he's good enough to come back strongly, but yeah, it was pretty rare territory for him to be in.
You know, sometimes you hear broadcasters say, well, he tried to win it in one shot or one swing or one throw in just one moment. And it was sad because he had the whole race in front of him. And it felt like he was willing to kind of die on that hill by cutting off Alonso. And then ultimately it backfired on him. Now, what unfolded right then on the radio comms with Fernando Alonso was quite interesting. And obviously that word then got back to Lewis when he got back to the garage, Lawrence. And then he had some comments with the media members after the fact. What did you make of just that kind of back and forth between the two post-race?
Well, I think Lewis was actually quite respectful up until the point he found out that Fernando called him an idiot. I mean, it's rare that we get a situation where a driver comes out and says, oh, that was completely my fault. It's even rarer that we get a situation where the stewards have decided on that incident, no further action needed. It's usually the other way around. The stewards are given a penalty and the drivers are defending themselves. So I think Lewis is very mature about that. And that just says everything about what it means to be a seven-time world champion like him. You know, he's done it all. He's won it all. And look, even guys like him can make mistakes from time to time. So he put his hands up and owned that. I think with Fernando, heat of the moment, you can kind of understand where it's coming from. But I read into that, you know, he can only lead and win from first place. Also a bit of frustration for Fernando in general, because he's seen a number of drivers who he considers himself to be on the same level as, and I actually consider himself to be him to be on the same level as. So we're talking Lewis, we're talking Seb, drivers with more championships than him. So Sebastian Vettel on 4, Lewis Hamilton on 7, Fernando Alonso on 2. And I think it's always been a sticking point for Fernando that he doesn't have more championships. So when he's up against these guys, he's got another chance to prove himself. He's on that level. And then something like that happens. I think a little bit of extra frustration comes out. So he's a fascinating character. And I wasn't really surprised by any of what was said, because he's always just bubbling under the surface with Fernando. And yeah, there it was. It came out again. So will they talk again? I think, you know, probably by the time they get to Zandvoort, they'll probably just chat. And given that neither of them are in a championship position, you know, I think they'll be able to put it behind them and carry on as they were. I don't think it's going to be the start of another great rivalry, because let's face it, at the moment, neither of them are even going for a victory. And that's what really sparks the big rivalries in F1.
He's great at getting under people's skin, Fernando, I think. And, you know, he's done that. I mean, he does that all the time. He even had a dig at Ferrari at the end of his interview to Sky. But what was interesting, I agree. I think Lewis handled it pretty well on, you know, for the most part. But it was interesting when Fernando was told, like, oh, you know, Lewis, you know, accepted responsibility. Fernando said, oh, that's nice of him. That's good to do, because obviously he's done it there before with Rosberg in 2016. And, you know, we've had a few incidents. So he couldn't help himself.
He just cut it off to say that was nice of him to do.
So I was saying to Lawrence, I'm a huge wrestling fan. And I think Alonso is like, you know, a heel that used to get in the old days, like a bad guy that, you know, is really, really good, but is just always saying, you know, that thing to just kind of, poke the bear all the time. And I think it can be healthy. You know, it's good to have those quotes sometimes, but it is interesting. There's that part of the character. I completely agree that he used to talk about Vettel in the same way. So I absolutely think there's some bitterness there deep down. And also, we always say that on the radio, heat of the moment, you can't judge a driver by what they say. But somehow with Fernando, I don't think that's true. Somehow, I think the guy knows exactly what he's saying at all times. One of the things that destroyed his relationship with Honda was he called their engine a GP2 engine when driving at the Japanese Grand Prix a few years ago. It was a huge insult, massive, massive insult to Honda. So I've always felt with him that he's one of the guys that, I don't know whether he rehearses them beforehand. He also did he did the finger wag at Yuki Tsunoda in Austria, but there's footage of him doing similar to Lewis when Lewis had parked up on the run-up Blanchimont on the second lap, which amusingly meant Alonso then missed an instruction from his engineer to change his engine mode. So he then had to be told to do it again. So he was too busy wagging his finger at Hamilton that he missed it. So I've said on the pod before, I kind of, this part of the Alonso character I find really fascinating. But I think that's the kind of guy he is. You know, he's always going to make sure he kind of has the last say. You know, he always tries to make sure he comes out of something on top.
He has to have the last word. I don't know what his relationship status is, his marital status. I don't know if he's married, he's got kids or whatever. But like, I would imagine that would be a frustrating part of being in a relationship with him, because he seems to always need to have that last say. And to your point, Lawrence, through watching Drive to Survive, through being around some of the drivers down in Miami, they never take ownership or responsibility for any incident on track. That's just like, you just know they're going to defend themselves. So I did think that that was pretty telling that Lewis, after seeing the footage, was like, yeah, I'm going to raise my hand. That one was on me. So I thought that that was a good way for him to close the book on what was a very disappointing weekend in Spa. But his teammate finished in the top five, continues to get points for Mercedes. You know, George, I think, has certainly been a bright spot this season for the team. And I think it's worth mentioning, you know, Seb and Ocon both getting some really vital points and hanging around to finish in the top 10. You know, they both had great performances as well.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
After the performances in Spa, who are you putting in the doghouse and why?
I can go first if you want. I know other drivers might go in here. I'm going to put McLaren as a whole in the doghouse. I'm going to put Danny Ric in there. I'm going to put Zach Brown in there. I'm going to put Lando Norris in there. I'm going to put the car in there as well. I really think it was a pretty awful week if you're a McLaren fan. You know, just how that looked optics-wise, getting rid of Danny Ric in the way they did. Interesting to see the fan reaction to that. But then at the same time, you know, Sunday came around and Ricciardo actually was starting in a pretty good position in seventh, completely faded during the race. I think mentally, I don't think he was in the right place after everything that happened. But also, you know, Alpine did a really great job and they're in that fight for fourth, but it's really slipping away from McLaren because they scored 0 points in that race. And very strange, you know, that car just doesn't seem to be, you know, performing at some places we go to, which is weird because sometimes Lando gets a lot out of it, but I thought they had an awful weekend just in general. So maybe people listening might think, well, that, you know, Ricciardo's performance maybe justifies the decision. You might be right, but there seems to be deeper problems than just Ricciardo not in form. It just seems like they're not in the right place at the moment. Maybe that will change over the next year in a bit, but yeah, they'd be in there for me.
Lawrence, how about you?
I'm going to say Sergio Perez because he was the only guy in the same car as race winner Max Verstappen and he was nowhere near him. And if I could take a bit from Nate's book, you could actually extend that to the whole field and say that no one other than Max Verstappen and Red Bull did the job they should have done around there because he was so far ahead of everyone. It was like he was driving in a different formula. But specifically, if I'm putting one person in the doghouse, it's Perez. And it's a shame because, you know, parts of this season, remember, it wasn't that long ago. Well, it was around May when we were talking about Perez potentially being a championship challenger. He won in Monaco and we thought, oh, maybe this can be the kickstart he needs. But if anything, it's gone completely the other way and he's got a contract in his pocket now to stay at Red Bull. But, you know, this is one of the issues is that if we've got Max Verstappen performing on this level and Red Bull performing on this level, well, that's, you know, it's not their fault that they're dominating F1, but you need competition. And if you don't even have a teammate who's close, I mean, I know Valtteri Bottas never really put a sustained challenge there, but he'd at least get close from time to time. And at the moment, on Perez's current form, you've really got to wonder how he's going to ever get back to fighting Max again. But yeah, so on the form of Sunday, it's got to be Perez for me.
Can we put Lewis Hamilton in the doghouse or can we just say it was disappointing?
I think he can go in the doghouse. I think, Katie, I think it's time you put him in there.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to, but...
So
it's a very rare opportunity as well.
That's fair.
Very few times you can legitimately put Lewis Hamilton in the doghouse. So.
That's fair. And I will tell you, full disclosure, obviously I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. Anytime he's involved in an incident or a collision, I'm always like, oh, my, of course it was... Oh, let me see the replay. It wasn't his fault. I saw the replay on Sunday and I was like, oh yeah, Alonso had nowhere to go. There's only one person really in this collision that you can blame. And so that was one of the first times where I was like, yeah, that's a mistake by Hamilton, certainly.
First time I saw it, I was like, that looked like Hamilton's fault. And that usually with collisions, yeah, you don't know. But yeah, it looked as slam dunk as I've ever looked for Lewis.
Yeah, so hopefully he escapes the doghouse this weekend for the Dutch Grand Prix.
A lot of people in it. Lawrence put the whole grid in.
We're going to need to build a bigger doghouse.
I put the entire entity of McLaren in, and then Katie put a seven-time world champion in, so it's busy.
A lot of egos in that doghouse. Let's see if they rebound this weekend. Let's look ahead at it, okay? A home race for Max Verstappen, which, if my calculations are correct, if the Red Bull can finish the race, Max would win by about 18 seconds or more. So what can we expect from Zandvoort, Nate?
Well, Zandvoort's kind of like a music festival. Like last year, it came on the calendar.
So you're into it.
I love it. It's a great place. And, you know, it obviously came back for Max. As soon as Max kind of emerged, we've talked about Zandvoort again. The place last year was just unbelievable. You know, there's music playing all the time. When Max was on track, it was loud. When Max crossed the line, it was even louder. When there's a slight delay in the media centers, maybe 1 or 2 seconds to what we're watching. So we knew it was kind of a spoiler alert time. Like Max went over the line, everyone went crazy. We were like, well, he's clearly on pole. Yeah, he is on pole by quite a long way. And then he just dominated in the race. That was another impressive, I think Max's most impressive performance last year was Zandvoort. He was just so good. He was like he was in Spa last weekend, just all weekend. Like everyone was talking about the pressure and he didn't feel it. And the Dutch there just adore him. You know, he's the reason they're there. So it's, you know, all that orange you see in Austria and Spa, double it, quadruple it, whatever you want to do. It's just everywhere. And if you're not wearing orange, I think you stand out in Zandvoort. So there are some brave Ferrari and Mercedes fans that go, but yeah, majority of people, Verstappen fans. It's a great place. Really, I always say to people when they ask me, where should we go for a race? I say, you've got to go to Zandvoort. You know, I'm not sure if the racing is the most entertaining you'll see on the season, but as an event, unbelievable.
Is the hype true, Lawrence?
Oh, yeah, it really is. It's a wonderful place to go and just, we don't really have anything like it. And it was interesting because there was this real party atmosphere at Zandvoort last year and everyone looked and they're like, oh, we can do that every race. We'll just bring a DJ to every race and we'll have loud music pumping out and all this kind of stuff. But when you do it at places like Monza or other tracks where it's just a different atmosphere, you know, it's not such a party atmosphere. The people aren't as willing just to kind of throw themselves into it. So, yeah, it's really special. And it's a very different track to Spa. I'm not going to make the mistake of betting against Max Verstappen again, but it is a very different track to Spa. So I think we might, again, see a slightly different order. It's not going to quite play to the advantages of the Red Bull, I don't think, as much as Spa did. But, yeah, Max is going to be epic round there. And Red Bull have already said, look, we need to make sure we look after Max this weekend. We're not going to give him any more media or promotional things than he has to do normally. He's going to have a normal race weekend. We're going to try and keep him in a bubble as much as they can, but they've also accepted that he's going to get a huge amount of support. Most of it, I think, is going to be very, very positive for him. And that will probably also be part of the difference when it comes to that qualifying lap and the start and if he has to pull an overtaking move.
Now, is it true that it's like attending a football game over in Europe where the fans actually know songs and they rehearse and they're on point? Is that actual facts?
Very true. Yeah. The grid last year was bouncing. I have a favorite song from Zandvoort that I was basically singing for about a week last year. Yeah. It wasn't actually, so fans were singing it, but other journalists heard it on the walk in. We then played it on YouTube and we were like, this song's amazing. So the premise is actually, I think it's actually a German song, but the Dutch have kind of adopted it as their own. And in German, I guess, or in Dutch, I don't know. But the lyrics, if you translate to English, and hear me out here, because people are going to hear the first line and think, what on earth is this song? But the first line is, what is the name of Niki Lauda's mother? And then the response is, Mama Lauda, Mama Lauda. And Mama Lauda in German means make it louder. So it's a play on words. And that was just booming around. Like the music festival I went to a few weeks ago in Budapest had nothing on the beat you just hear constantly at Zandvoort. It's everywhere, and you can't get away from it. So
well,
come away.
Don't keep our listeners wanting more. Go on, break out the song. Give us a little rendition,
and
please.
Lawrence heard it live last year, the real thing, so he can tell.
Yeah, Lawrence can tell if this is accurate or not.
And this is going to be in German as well. So any German listeners, if I butcher your language, I do apologize. But the song goes, Wie heißt die Mutter von Niki Lauda? Mama Lauda, Mama Lauda. And then it just keeps going on and on and on. It does get louder as it goes on. And yeah, it's just a brilliant song. And I will be singing it in Lawrence's ear for most of the weekend.
Lawrence, you didn't want to join in?
No,
you didn't want it to become a duet?
I don't know the words. I don't know, my German is as good as Nate. I was really impressed by that. That was fantastic. I mean, It usually has a bit more bass, but I'm not going to hold that against Nate because there's this like boom bass line going through.
I don't think it's fairly late here. I don't think the neighbors in my hotel would be too grateful if I started banging on the walls. But yeah, it's usually a lot better than that. People should go listen to it. It's a great song, and it's up there with that Supermax song for like most popular played at Zandvoort. You hear it all the time. It's absolutely bonkers, Zandvoort. So
I'm going to be listening on the broadcast.
If no one sings it in the stand, I might have to grab a microphone and just G the crowd up a bit because it's a great song.
Please do. Okay, as we end all episodes of Unlapped, it's time for your predictions. Lawrence, I wish you better luck this time around. How about that?
I'm not sure luck's got anything to do with it.
That wasn't great. All right, so tell me your top three. Who's going to finish on the podium? And then who would maybe have the most surprising performance at Zandvoort? Okay, Lawrence, we'll start with you.
Well, okay, so not making the same mistake twice. Mm. Max Verstappen victory. And actually, you may be able to copy and paste that for the remaining races, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Max Verstappen victory. And I know I made this mistake last week, but I'm going with it again. I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton in second place because I feel like, there's some similarities between Zandvoort and Budapest. And obviously, Mercedes is very quick there. And then let's throw Carlos Sainz on the podium as well to have a three. I'd say Lewis Hamilton is surprising enough, being that far up after what happened in Spa.
That's fair. I'll allow it.
Are you allowed that? Okay, I'll go with that as my most surprising.
Where's Charles? Just asking a follow-up.
Let's talk to the Ferrari strategist about that. I would say...
He's on plan G by that point, I think. Plan Z.
Plan G in the gentleman's eighth place.
All right, fair enough. Max, Lewis, Carlos. All right, Nate.
Okay, so the two drivers I think finishing behind Max this weekend are going to be... I was thinking a Ferrari and Mercedes split, but I'm going to put Leclerc and Russell up there. I think Russell's been great all year. I think for Charles, it's important he gets back on that podium for his confidence and his mental well-being, you know. It's just so difficult to look past Max, like, especially when you remember what he did here last year. And then surprise is a really good one. I think I'd love to see Albon surprise again. I thought we haven't mentioned him on the pod, and I think he deserves a shout out. Absolutely brilliant at the weekend. Often drivers seem to lose a bit of form after signing a contract. He signed a contract at the start of the summer break and then turned in that performance. So I'll say him again. I'll say, you know, Albon, maybe Q3 might be a bit a stretch at Zandvoort, but he seems to be in a good place right now. So maybe he can push for points again.
I'm going to join in here and predict something. And I'm only predicting it for pure drama and interest. Max, certainly. And then I'm going to put Lewis Hamilton just slightly ahead of Fernando Alonso. I would love to see that battle there. Yeah, so I'm just going to throw that in. I'm writing it in right now. We will obviously check back after Zandvoort. You guys are both there already? You've arrived? Is that the case?
Yeah, already there.
I don't need to wish you well in your travels because you arrived safely. You're ready to roll?
Yeah, ready. And we've already arrived safely, so it's all good.
Get some rest. I know you'll need it because you're back on the grind. It's going to be a fun and I don't want to say surprising into the second half of the season because I think we already know what we're in store for. But as always, I appreciate the time, the analysis. You two are so enjoyable to chat with. This is another episode of Unlapped. We've been itching for F1 to return, and you know what? Spa did not disappoint. So stick with us every week. We've got a new episode of Unlapped. You can find us on YouTube. Subscribe to ESPN F1 for more F1 content. And remember to give us a like and a rating wherever you get your podcast. A 5-star review is much appreciated. Until next week, I'm Katie George. He's Nate Saunders. And that's Lawrence Edmondson. Cheers.